These words from the prophecy of Isaiah chapter 10. In that day, the remnant of Israel and the survivors of the house of Jacob will no more lean upon him that smote them, but will lean upon the Lord, the Holy One of Israel, in truth. A remnant will return. This is, in one sense, a message of hope. It's also a fair warning. The people of Israel were about to be exiled under the dominion of and under the enslavement of Nebuchadnezzar of Assyria. And yet the promise is that there will be survivors. And implied in that reality, what will survivors do? Why will some survive? At Pearl Harbor, in the visitor center area and the grounds apart from where the Arizona Memorial is and the Missouri is docked, there are a few other things that you can do. There's a submarine that you can go through. The actual anchor of the USS Arizona is mounted, and it's quite a sight to behold. But there's also a walkway, a pathway through winding areas where you see, among other things, plaques that have sayings, that have inspirational messages, that have historical stories of that day. There's a wonderful poem by Eleanor Roosevelt. But the most poignant one for me was a plaque that had on it only five words. And the five words were, "Why them and not me?" That quote was attributed to a man who survived the USS Oklahoma, which was the ship that incurred the second highest number of casualties on December 7, 1941. "Why me?" he asked, instead of the other 429 who perished. Why did I survive? Survivors always ask that question. There are rather powerful stories of people who were ticketed on 9/11 planes that, for reasons more random than not, simply stepped off or took an earlier or later flight. Several well-known names, Robert Redford was one of them, Muffet McGraw, who coaches the University of Notre Dame women's basketball team, and many others. Why them and not me? When I read that at Pearl Harbor a couple weeks ago, I read it as a Vietnam-era civilian with a high draft number. I know why them and not me. The answer to the question in my life is simple. Random chance, an accident of birth. That's why I survived. My Rat Pack in high school had five guys in it, four guys in me. Of those five, two served in the U.S. Army, two served in the U.S. Navy. One went off to college. And of those five, four survived. Why them and not me? Random chance, initially. There's another reason I'll get to in a little while. And that relates, it seems, to the opportunity and also the obligation granted to survivors. The ESPY Awards are about to occur. Those are ESPN's version of the Oscars, Achievement in Sports. They will occur during the All-Star break, the baseball All-Star break, because God forbid we have one day without sports. I'm not joking. And in the run-up to the ESPYs, there's always a repeated replaying of among our country's most famous sports speeches given by the late Jim Valvano, who coached the University of North Carolina State University's Wolfpack to the national championship in basketball in 1983. And 10 years later, the year of the first ESPYs in 1993, just 8 weeks before his own death, which he knew was coming, Jim Valvano gave an electrifying speech to the world in which he outlined, I believe, the task of the survivor. Each day we survive, we have an opportunity to do what he said were three things. And he knew that he only had a limited number of days in which to do these three things, but intended to make every day count in this way as long as he survived. He said, "Make every day an occasion for laughter, to think, and to be moved to tears." He said, "That's a good day for laughter, to think and be moved to tears. We are survivors. That's our job, to laugh. Now, I talk about laughter a lot, and usually I tell you a lame joke. Not today. I'm suggesting that survivors make this a good day through laughter by remembering to or relearning to laugh at yourself. Because why not? We are pretty funny. I'm not especially good with things mechanical, nor am I creative and strong. And this last week, it fell to me to do something mechanical, to fix something that was amiss. And I always do this with trepidation. It's not a big deal. That's what's so embarrassing about it. My job was to take the nozzle off the hose and replace it with the mosquito repellent that I was going to shoot the yard with. Well, the nozzle had been on the hose for quite a while, and I do not have big hands, and they are not very strong. And the last time I tried to do this myself, I broke the nozzle. And then the next time I had to do it, the guy who's next door, who's about 30 years younger than me and can go bear hunting with a stick, came by and just did that. Well, he wasn't there, and it's my, and so I, oh, here we go. So I got out the wrenches and the WD-40, and miracle of miracles, I undid the nozzle. I mean, this is so stupid, it's almost not worth talking about. I undid the nozzles with no bloodshed. A miracle happened. Well, that is just one of my foibles. It's just part of, and I just walked in the house, I said to Jeannie, laughing, I said, guess what, a miracle happened. You might as well laugh at yourself, because we all have these quirks. We all have these ways of being ourselves that are just, well, they're just plain funny, aren't they? And here's the benefit. Here's why it's important that survivors do this. Because it will remind you that you sit in the company of others who are all pretty darn funny. And when you are able to laugh at yourself, you become more able to laugh off the foibles of others that sometimes drive you nuts. And I think that makes us more tolerant. That's a good day when you can laugh it off as a survivor, to laugh. And Valvano also says to think. You know, and we do think all the time. We think about all manners of social, political, and religious issues and ills, do we not? But I would contend that a lot of us spend a lot of our time thinking in this way in what becomes kind of an echo chamber. And again, I'm going to pick on Facebook for just a second because it's so easy. We all have people that post stuff that we read on, they like this. And then when somebody likes something, all their friends know that they like it. And I have people that like the right-wing Gazette, and I have people that like the left-wing journal, right? And what's interesting to me is that when somebody likes one of those things, and then dozens of other people comment on them, you go read the comments, and the comments create an echo chamber. Yeah, right on, absolutely, I agree, and so on both sides of the coin. That is not reasoned reflection. That is not what Valvano meant when he said, take the time to think through. Well, think through anything, but let's use as an example things that people like from the left-wing Gazette or the right-wing journal or whatever. You get in discussions with people like this all the time. I do too. And the criteria by which the echo chamber becomes an exchange of ideas revolve around two questions, it seems to me. Is the person with whom you're having this discussion, does that person have a vested interest in their particular point of view? Do they gain something by winning that argument? The answer is yes, there's no talking to them. They will keep talking that way until they win. A second question, are they willing to admit they could be wrong? If the answer to that question is no, there's no talking to them. There's no room for negotiation. Now that's a conversation you're having with somebody, yourself, or a conversation you're watching on television between two competing points of view. If one or the other has a strong vested personal interest to gain materially from holding that position, forget it. If neither is willing to admit they're wrong, no progress will occur. But if the contrary is true, it's entirely possible that both of us want the same thing. We just see different ways of getting to the same place. But if we give up vested interest and admit the possibility we could be wrong, we find, perhaps, some common ground. and it's thinking through issues in this way, I think, that come close to what Valvano asked us to do as survivors, to make a day great, to think through and find common ground for progress, rather than to simply retrench one's position more loudly and create echo chambers. That's a good day to think through how to find common ground, for we are survivors. To laugh, to think, Valvano said be moved to tears. I'm going to change that a little bit. To be moved to action, because I think when we are moved to tears, we are energized to act. Now, I'm in the business of trying to move people to action. I am a social commentator, a sociologist. It's my job to teach my students, and hopefully they will teach others, that not always do things appear as they are. Things are not always what they appear. Let's put it that way. I have a colleague that's fond of saying, and he's a statistician, he's a data guy. He said, that's another perfectly reasonable theory wrecked by an ugly fact. The data show otherwise to a lot of things that we are deeply entrenched and hold to. Well, I have one ugly fact that I simply want to put into the room and use it as a way of calling us to action, an ugly fact. There are 42 what are deemed to be developed or modernized countries on planet Earth, 42 of them. The United States ranks 26th in what I think may be the most important indicator of cultural health. The United States ranks 26th out of 42 in its infant mortality rate. How good are we at keeping babies alive for a year? It would seem to me that a successful society would make that job one. I tell my students that when you go to a doctor and undergo a physical exam, the first thing the doctor does is take your blood pressure. And that's sort of the leading indicator of other things being amiss or not. I think a country's infant mortality rate is a leading indicator of other things being amiss or not. Now, without going into a whole big thing or trying to polarize this discussion, it's an extraordinarily complicated issue. But it raises, I think, the specter of how we might be moved to act on behalf of children. I think that any soldier who has gone into liberating strife, if asked, would say, I did this so that the people who come after me will have it better than I do. In other words, for the sake of the children, if you will. Well, all of us have children for whom we care or have cared. All of us elect and pay people to keep watch over children through government, through education, through religion, through health care. We all hire and elect caregivers for children. We are, to varying degrees, caregivers and caretakers of children. And it would seem to me reasonable to ask, a year from now, is it possible that any or all of us in this room could say, if we survive a year, and if we don't, until we don't, is it reasonable to ask that a year from now, all of us could say at least once, because of what we did, or because of those we have chosen to be on watch with, one child is a little safer. One child has more food. One child is a little healthier because of what we did, or because of those with whom we share watch over children collectively. If that's true, I think we've held up our end, because we are survivors. When we visited the Pearl Harbor Memorial and were on the portion of that place that sits over the USS Arizona, we were blessed in a way to be in the company of one particular man who the National Park Service ranger stopped us all and said, hey, I want you to welcome, and I forget his name. The man is 98 years old, and he survived the Arizona. Only 2 in 10 did. And he had with him what I'm assuming are probably 2 or 3 great-grandchildren. And he brought them over to a portion of the memorial and pointed down where you could see the USS Arizona pretty clearly, and was telling them that in relatively short order, because he's 98, he would like his body cremated and his ashes given to a U.S. Navy diver, and there are those who serve the U.S. Navy in this way, and it is a high honor that they will take the ashes of survivors and place them in the company of their shipmates on the USS Arizona, along with their families, if they wish. I think that that guy would have said, if one child, because of my 70 plus years since that day, was safer, less hungry, or healthier, it was worth it to have survived. We are survivors. We keep watch over those who will follow us. And in honor of all those who have enabled us to be here and to have survived this day, one more child on our watch or by our actions is safer, less hungry, or healthier. That makes it worth it for all those who have led us to this moment. Amen.